afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. Three 15-year-olds were arrested for crashing a stolen car, and the chief of the Renton PD, he is not holding back. That is what's trending.
What's trending in King County?
I wasn't done.
My bad.
Want to do that again?
Yeah, let's go for it.
And that is what's trending. Brought to you by Legacy Group Capital Northwest Fund.
What's trending in King County?
Okay. Sounded better the second time. When I said the first time, I didn't really sell the what's trending. Second time, I felt like I did. So we've got three 15-year-olds, according to the Renton PD, who got in a little bit of trouble. And as a result, because in Renton, like everywhere else, they're kind of sensing the trend. They know the trend. They're looking at the data. It's concerning. You've got the chief of police there, John Schult, calling out soft on crime policies. He's calling out Democrats, but he's not directly saying it because you got to be, you know, a little bit careful. You don't want to bring a whole lot of attention to your department and what it is you're going through for fear that maybe there'll be some political consequences, but he's doing what needs to be done as best of to his ability and calling out this rise in juvenile crime. You had this allegation from the PD saying that three 15-year-olds, they apparently crashed a stolen car. And that's, to me, already shocking because we've never heard of stories like that in Washington state of juveniles stealing cars, but ends up crashing the car. Then they flee. Cops track them down just a few blocks away. And when they make their arrest, oh, guess what? At least one of them dropped a loaded gun, which is also shocking because I have been told, and it's been made clear to me, that tough on gun laws actually work. And we've got a whole bunch of those tough gun laws here in Washington state. How did they get a hold of it? This sounds to me like a dirty cop planted the gun. I've seen The Wire. I know how this works. I saw Training Day. That's all we need to know the truth here. Now, of course, that's not true. This is the kind of story that's been happening very frequently, unfortunately, in Washington state. And after they made this arrest, I'm sure the chief said to himself, my God, again, seriously? Okay, something needs to be done. Something has to be done. And so what he decided to do was put out a press release. And in this press release, gave some details on what happened, followed by some quotes. Quotes that I think are incredibly important to hear. Very important. He says, there's no other way to put it, but we are seeing more and more juveniles involved in violent and property crimes. In some cases, rates are doubling and tripling year to year. And now, we are constantly being told that there's no crime crisis. It's not happening. It's made up. Fox News is making it up. Those conservatives are just creating this fiction for some unknown reason. We're all apparently making it up. That's what we're told. In fact, we're told crime is going down. I see that tweet almost every single day. Crime is actually going down. When, no, it's not. I mean, in some instances, I suppose it is. At some point, you know, you can't have record-breaking crime years every single year. But they're comparing crime right now to historic highs of the last 2 years instead of comparing it to where things were in 2019 and before then, which is really what all of us are talking about when we say, hey, there's way more crime now than before. There's always that person who comes out, it was way worse in the 80s. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and I'm not talking about the 80s. I'm talking about literally just a few years ago where things were, before all your criminal justice reforms created this mess. Now, just looking at the violent crimes with juveniles in Renton, they put out the stats. They said from 2022, 2023, a 40% increase with juvenile assaults. Over double that when the assault involved a firearm, so a little over 80%. Now, they say armed robberies went from 13 in 2022 to 21 in 2023. 20 of them were at gas stations. Remember all those stories in Renton and Federal Way and Tukwila and Des Moines about the gas stations that have been getting robbed, armed robberies. Oh, yeah, yeah, juveniles apparently responsible. They say property crimes from a percentage increase are insane, 342%. Now, in this case, we're talking about stolen cars, 1 to 25. So 1 in 2022 up to 25 in 2023. And these are just the ones that they've caught. Now, 25 stolen vehicles in a year in Seattle, you'd be all like, whoa, that's some, what are you guys doing over there to make it so much better than it was? This was 25 in Tacoma. Man, we would be doing really, really well. Spokane, we would be singing the praises of whatever policy was put in place or person who was put in charge. But this is Renton. It's not Seattle or Tacoma or Spokane. This is Renton. And it's having an impact because it's not just about crime. It's not just about a crime story. It's about business. It's about quality of life. Here's former Renton City Councilmember Randy Corman to our sister station, Kyra News Radio.
If it's allowed to continue, we'll start losing businesses, and then we won't get to the sales tax revenues that we actually need to hire the police officers.
It's all full circle. And so the chief continues by saying, as a society, we must figure out how to curb this trend. Our young people need help and guidance, and they need to be held accountable for their actions. They realize there aren't any meaningful consequences, and there's no deterrence. And boy, is that correct. Hasn't that been the theme for the last couple years, in particular when it comes to juvenile crime? There are no consequences, which means they have no incentive not to continue the behavior. In fact, quite the opposite. They're incentivized to continue the behavior because they earn some street cred. They're seen as kind of edgy and cool because what they're doing in this case, a lot of the time, we're talking about juveniles who are either in gangs or what I call gang adjacent. They're on the pathway to joining a gang. They're awfully close to joining a gang. They may be being recruited to join a gang because they're seen as vulnerable. They're seen as kids that can be taken advantage of. Now, when we talk about juvenile crime, I've always made a point to say it's not even just about the quote-unquote traditional juvenile numbers, like under 18, minors, because I'm seeing the same trend amongst 18 to 21, 22, 23-year-olds, young adults. We're getting the crimes as early as like 12 and 13 going up until about 21, 22. Like we're seeing that kind of significant surge. Seattle, perfect example. They just ended up arresting three people for alleged involvement in some home invasion robberies that have been happening in the Lake City neighborhood. They've been happening over the past several months. Now, in each of these cases, they were apparently armed with handguns and or rifles. According to the SPD, they had handguns and rifles. So cops do their investigation. They're able to identify some suspects, and they just made some arrests. Amongst them, 21-year-old man, a 20-year-old man, and a 27-year-old man. 21, 20, and 27. Now, I'm willing to bet the 27-year-old is probably like the leader of this little crew. But again, a 20 and 21-year-old. And these are folks who are not even just in the Seattle area. The 20 and 27-year-old apparently were in Snohomish County, which is where they've been booked. The 21-year-old booked in King County because there was a gun involved. How long he'll stay there, or actually any of the three will stay in jail, they might already be out. But how many of these kinds of cases have we seen? How many of these exact scenarios have we talked about? Whether it's stolen vehicle, a robbery at a gas station or pot shop, home invasion robberies, these are being done by young people. These are being done by young people. And the Renton PD chief was 100% correct to point out, he said, our young people need help and guidance. Yes, they do. Absolutely, they do. Without it, this is what ends up happening. You get kids who steal cars. You get kids who commit armed robberies, allegedly. And when they say they need help and guidance, all he means is responsible adults in their lives. Oftentimes, when we're talking, and I really wish, it's not always easy, so I give the media a little bit of a pass here, because it's not easy when dealing with juvenile crimes, because we don't get access often to their names. which makes it very difficult to look into their backgrounds. Because the one thing that I'm willing to bet is the case, the majority of the time, is that when we're dealing with a juvenile criminal suspect, we're dealing with someone who comes from a broken home. And it's almost always the father isn't involved, and the father isn't involved at a young age. And they never were able to get that father figure to show them the way to stay out of trouble. This is particular about boys. Girls, not as much, but this is very specific for boys, where you know that if you don't have a responsible father figure in the person's life, they are at a higher likelihood of going down the wrong path. And I say the higher likelihood. It doesn't guarantee that some kid is going to be some punk like this, right? It doesn't guarantee that at all. Socioeconomics play a role in all of this, but generally speaking, you're at a higher likelihood, according to all of the data. According to all of the data, this is not controversial. And yet, somehow, we stop having any meaningful conversations about the importance of family structures. When was the last time we had that conversation societally? When was the last time this was the big part of a crime story from a media outlet other than this show? We just do not have these conversations. Conservatives will point it out, and then we'll get called racist. We're not supposed to talk about this because usually, according to the data, when we're talking about broken families, there is a large number of broken families within the Black community where fathers are not there. Now, apparently, that's supposed to be deemed racist to even bring up, even though that's what the data says. And by the way, the data says broken families, regardless of race, a young boy will have a higher likelihood of going down that wrong path. And no, this is not an attack on single moms. That was the one thing I remember a few years ago when I was talking about this on our sister station. I made this very point, and I started to get hit up by single moms and others saying, how dare you attack single mothers? I'm not attacking single mothers. Do you know how hard it is to be a single mom? Well, no, I technically don't, but I imagine it's very difficult. I'm not blaming a single mother. Many times when we're talking about these cases, it's a single mom who maybe isn't spending as much time at home as she would like because she's working two jobs to try to help because of the absent father, the absent husband or boyfriend, who decided to just, I don't really care, I'm going to peace out. It's not the mom's fault. Sometimes it's the parent's fault completely. Sometimes we just are dealing with really bad parents who don't care about their kids. But the reality is what the reality is. It's the data. So we can either talk about that, we can either try to address it, or you can keep pretending that it's not an issue, and bam, all of a sudden, you combine that reality with soft-on-crime laws, and you keep getting what's happening in Renton, Seattle, Tukwila, Tacoma, Spokane, Bellingham. I can literally list every single city in the state of Washington. I will not, though, because that's a lot. That's too much. Port Orchard, Bellingham. I said Bellingham. I already screwed it up. Push the button.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
Okay. So Seattle media has decided to go all in and back the permanent supportive housing project for the homeless, whether we're talking about in the city of Redmond or really anywhere else. They love the idea. They love the concept. These are folks who like housing first as a model. And they either, when it comes to the Redmond issue, they either frame it in such a biased way, it's transparently dishonest to anyone who knows even a little bit about what's going on there, or they frame it by simply shaming people pushing back. And in the Seattle Times today, Danny Westney, their columnist, decided to do both. Now, just to catch you guys up in case you haven't been listening for the last few days, the city of Redmond decided to sneak in a 100-unit permanent supportive housing project into a neighborhood without even so much as a public hearing. They snuck it in. That was intentional. They didn't need to do a public hearing because in this case, it was a land swap acquisition kind of deal, which means they didn't have to have this public hearing that they otherwise would have. Now, in a lot of ways, wouldn't have made a difference because they had already made up their mind. However, it shows just a little bit of respect to the community, at least allows people to feel like they're being heard. And they decided to not do any of that, not even a little bit. And so people started to get very upset. In fact, on Tuesday, ahead of the city council meeting, they decided, the people who were upset, to protest outside of the meeting.
We demand the city council to rescind their decision.
Rescind their decision, which is not going to happen. They're going to lose this battle, which I hope they take that anger from losing into November. I pray that they do. But Wes Neat decided to dive into this topic, and he did it in a roundabout way because really his column is about the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, the KCRHA, which is a total mess. Total mess. It squandered money. Lots of turnover within staff. They're without a permanent leader right now. Obviously, since they've been doing what they've been doing, homelessness has gotten worse, not better. This is the place that, as you'll recall, because we broke this story last year, decided to announce that they were offering endless, unlimited vacation for their employees as a perk.
Unlimited vacation.
Yeah. I wonder why nothing is getting done. I wonder why things are worse. And so he's trying to understand why that has been such a colossal failure. And he says, look, the people over at the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, they have a lot of the blame on their shoulders. However, then he decides to blame you. This is what he writes. With all its bungling and false starts, it has deserved that blame. But you could see another reason the regional approach is struggling on display this week out in Redmond. It's a more deep-seated one. A lot of folks out in the suburbs don't want to be involved in this. I mean, they really don't want to have anything to do with it. And then he mocks some of the concerns, some of the people who showed up to the meeting and spoke. He complains that they're too unreasonable, too pessimistic. They're negative Nancys, although I don't think you can say that anymore because it's probably sexist. And so, much like King Five did, we talked about this yesterday, he decides to misframe the issue. This is what he writes. What makes this testimony even more concerning is that Redmond isn't proposing a tent city encampment, an RV lot, a methadone clinic, or any of the other more controversial projects in the human services arena. It's an apartment building designed to get people out of the shelters. In the nonprofit world, it's known as permanent supportive housing because it's not temporary like a shelter, and it comes with 24/7 staffing that includes counseling and other support services. In this case, it would house people who are homeless and who earn less than 30% of the median income, about $28,000 maximum. It's proposed by Plymouth Housing, which has 16 such buildings in Seattle. That's great. That's impressive. That implies that those are huge successes, right? Otherwise, why would he bring it up? He's basically saying, look, they've got 16. How many housing projects do you have? None. Okay. Well, why don't you leave it to the experts? Here's what he ignores, intentionally or out of ignorance, maybe even both. Permanent supportive housing sounds kind of decent when you frame it the way he just did, right? Staffing, counseling, support services for people. It's great. Except what he leaves out is that you can continue your drug addiction if you're a drug addict. You do not have to get any kind of specific treatment as a condition of the free housing that will last forever. And kind of like the kids who are constantly breaking the law because there are no incentives not to, there's no real punishment, no consequences. Well, guess what? You have zero incentive if you're a drug addict to get any help because you know you have forever free housing. Why would you work a job and put that money to rent so you can live on your own when you can put that money into more fentanyl? These are drug addicts. They are addicted. They are not making reasonable choices in their lives. And the people who live at these spots, they're not like you and me, just one missed paycheck away from landing out on the streets. Now they just need a little bit of help. Well, why is the help permanent? I mean, they're just like you and I. They were one missed paycheck away. Why is it permanent? What's going on there? Oh, because we're dealing with the chronically homeless. We're dealing with people who are the most difficult of cases. Why? Because they've got addiction issues, mental health issues. They have criminal pasts. Let's go to some of the Plymouth housing buildings, for example, in Seattle that Danny Westneat mentioned, because I'm very familiar with them. I'm really familiar, in fact. I remembered, because I've got that kind of brain. I went back into November 2020 on my blog, And I remember the date, weirdly enough. I don't normally remember the dates. I remember the details. But I went back, and it was just at the point where the city council in Seattle had finalized its budget, which defunded the police. And on that day, a man stabbed a social worker to death in one of those Plymouth housing buildings in Seattle. The killer was, quote unquote, formerly homeless, meaning a beneficiary of permanent supportive housing. Then I remember Juantes Tolos. Do you remember that guy? He's got an interesting name. It kind of stands out. Do you remember him, Producer Brady?
I do not.
Okay, well, then let me tell you a little bit about him. Now, on January 31st of 2022, he already had a very, very long criminal history. It was very long. Now, he decided on that day, according to police, and I've got the video surveillance up on my Twitter feed, he decided to wander around the Belltown neighborhood. He spotted this one woman, I believe she was in her mid-30s, slight woman, small woman. She's walking home from Amazon where she worked, and he decided to go behind her, take a bat that he was holding, and with all the power he could muster, swinging it at her head, cracking her skull. She falls to the ground unconscious. He then walks the other way. Didn't even run. He just walked the other way. In fact, he was kind of hungry that day. So right after that attack, he went and got a slice of pizza, which I'm sure was delicious. And then he went home. And where do you think he lived? Do you think it was at a Plymouth housing unit?
Absolutely not.
But it was.
But it was.
Yes, it was. It was.
They allowed him to be committing these crimes and living there?
No, they probably didn't know about the crimes, or they just didn't really care. Because what they do in Plymouth housing, which again is not being talked about, they have the housing first model, which says just put someone in housing first and then address the underlying issue if they're interested, plus harm reduction. This is directly from their website. I went back in my book in the chapter on this very issue to get the exact quote. Plymouth housing creates a quote-unquote non-judgmental space. Why would you want to have a non-judgmental space? Oh, it's to, quote, residents to make changes if
and when
they are ready. So in other words, like I said, if you're a drug addict or mentally ill, whatever the issue is, you can go ahead and make changes and they'll support you when and if you're ready.
So there's no minimum timetable. If you keep doing this for a year, we'll kick you out or anything like that?
Bam! There you go. So long as you're not, like, beating a whole bunch of people up in the housing unit, you're pretty much going to be okay. Now, perhaps this will be the one instance in Redmond in which there are no problems whatsoever or people are reasonably upset. And all of this could have been completely avoided had they actually cared just a little bit at the city level about what the people had to say. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. It is Thursday, which means we've got a video up, and I take you through the reality of illegal immigrant crime. We're told that they commit no crimes. In fact, they commit fewer crimes than American-born citizens. It is a total lie, and I take you through it in the video. Just check out any of my social media channels. It's brought to you by your local tax expert, Greg Nunn, and Nunn Better Tax Resolution. Back with more after this.
How not to be the victim of a home invasion robbery. We'll talk with super secret security expert Mike at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning on The Brian Suit Show.
Hey, look at that. I appreciate you sticking around on this. What turned out to be a really nice Thursday. It started off this morning pretty crummy, and then it got pretty nice. Although now it does actually.
I mean, as I was coming in today, it did start to rain. So, I mean, it's not normal Washington rain where it's like dumping, but it's nothing like we had the last weekend.
It doesn't dump in Washington State. Oh, stop.
What?
Not Forks. It doesn't dump. It's overcast and
drizzly. I mean, I said right now it's fine, but there are plenty of days where we get the dump.
It's not that often that it happens.
I mean, I could cite the million.
It rains more in Miami.
I get it, but the amount of baseball games I had rained out growing up here.
Okay, fair enough. But that's not dump. That's all I'm saying. So, much to the dismay of the anti-Semitic progressive base within the Democrat Party, Speaker Mike Johnson in fact, will be inviting Benjamin Netanyahu to address the Congress. We don't know when it might happen. We don't even necessarily know if Netanyahu would say yes, because he is in the middle of a war, although that didn't stop Zelensky from coming here and going elsewhere to provide speeches to, you know, the folks that he needed to support him. And obviously, Netanyahu and Israel as a whole and Jews globally need the support of its strong allies. And the United States is the chief ally. Now, the announcement happened today during an interview on CNBC, but what to me was really interesting, because this creates a huge problem for Democrats, because you're going to have a number of Democrats, assuming that it does get scheduled and he does show up and he does deliver the speech, you're going to have a bunch of Democrats who are going to not show up, or they'll have some, you know, symbolic protest, some symbol that they're wearing, some little pin that says how much they hate Jews, but they don't want to say it directly, so they'll just put it on a pin. That's going to create a problem for the Democrats that is going to worsen their relationship within the Jewish community. And it's already, it's not at a breaking point, because again, I don't think that Democrats dislike Israel or Jews. I think the progressive movement does. And unfortunately, Chuck Schumer decided to give his despicable and underhanded speech calling for a new election and throwing Benjamin Netanyahu and really Israel under the bus. He did it simply to placate the anti-Semites within his party. Now, Chuck Schumer is pro-Israel. Very little doubt about that. But he decided to push aside his own values and principles in order to try to placate the fringe anti-Semites, and Mike Johnson on CNBC today called it out.
What Chuck Schumer did was just almost staggering, just unbelievable. To suggest to our strongest ally in the Middle East, the only stable democracy, that he knows better how to run their democracy is just patently absurd. I mean, imagine if I came on your show this morning and called for a regime change in Ukraine in the middle of their crisis fighting for their very survival. That's what Israel's facing right now, and for the leader of the Senate to say such a thing was just outrageous. And I think it was received that way in Israel. I don't think they appreciate that very much. And it sends a terrible signal to our allies and our enemies around the world. So I wish Schumer would keep his comments to himself on all that.
Yeah, just imagine for a moment. I'm so glad Mike Johnson pointed that out. Imagine for a moment you had folks on the Democrat side or Republican side say, you know what, that Zelensky fella, he's not killing enough Russians. He's not ending the war fast enough. Maybe it's time to get him out of office and get someone else in there, you know? You think they would ever do that? The second you say, hey, before we give billions and billions and billions of dollars more to Ukraine, can we just have some oversight? How dare you're a Putin puppet. How dare you? You couldn't criticize or even just in good faith have a question. You're either all in on Ukraine or you're a Putin puppet. And yet, when it comes to Israel, oh, I guess this is totally okay. It's totally appropriate what they did. Now, Schumer is getting a whole lot of pushback for this. And he should. He 100% should get pushback. He chose to satisfy or try to satisfy the anti-Jew base of the Democrat Party as a means to help Joe Biden, who's not in as easy of a position to do what Chuck Schumer did. Ultimately, he might end up doing it, and he's certainly going to support it. And we've heard him change his rhetoric around Israel. But for Biden, who also I don't think is anti-Israel, but what he's doing here is looking at the polling numbers, looking at Michigan in particular, where he is underwater. He needs to win Michigan. He cannot win re-election if he loses Michigan. He can win Michigan and still lose, but he cannot win without Michigan. And right now, he's most definitely not winning in Michigan. And it's driven in large part by the Arab American Palestinian population, the Muslim population in Michigan, which is rather high in relation to the other states. I think they're just at 2.5%. But 2.5%, if you lose, let's say, 50% of the 2.5%, yeah, you end up losing in Michigan. It's tight and it's not, it's actually, weirdly enough, it's not as tight as it once was. It's going to still be tight. But right now, I think Trump is up by 4 points, give or take a point. You can't afford to lose those people. And so Chuck Schumer goes out there, makes his little speech because he thinks it's going to help cut some some of the tension between that community and Biden.
I gave this speech out of a real love for Israel. And if you read the speech, we called only for there to be an election after the hostilities had declined, after Hamas was defeated.
Weird, because you were the one who was saying that Benjamin Netanyahu was getting in the way of peace, and you compared him directly to both the PLO and Hamas. You made the direct comparison. So, you know, maybe sit this one out, because you're lying. We all know you are, and we know what your intent was. You don't love Israel as much as you love the Democrat Party and keeping Donald Trump out of office. And they clearly know in all of this that they have an anti-Semitism problem. And maybe part of the issue was also to cut back on some of the criticism of the party, because you've got some very loud progressives who, you know, just say they're not fans of Israel or Jews. And they happen to be fans of, quote unquote, Palestine, which they mean the land that Israel is on. Listen to this interview with Al Green, not that Al Green, not the musician, but the kooky, fringy member of Congress speaking on C-SPAN about this very issue.
This letter goes to the president because I wanted to just remind him of something that I'm sure he's acutely aware of, and that is that...
Hold on, sir. You can't say you're doing something to remind someone of something they're acutely aware of. That means they don't need to be reminded. So really what you should say is you did this open letter about quote-unquote Palestine because you wanted to bring more attention to your views on this issue. That's why. So no, you're not doing anything to remind someone about something they're acutely aware of, unless we're now redefining, and maybe the left has redefined acutely and aware and of. It's possible that all those three words have been redefined like they did to women and violence.
Of May 1948, Israel declared itself a state.
Israel declared itself as a... I mean, was anyone else involved? I'm kind of curious. I mean, was the UN... They weren't involved? Oh, man, maybe all that... You know what? The Jews, my people, we have been distorting history. It turns out that that was all fake news. Oh, my God.
And President Truman, who was the president of the United States at that time...
Oh, thank you
was the first major world power or country to recognize Israel as such.
That's true. That part's true.
And that has created an imbalance.
Did it?
I'm hoping that we will understand that at that time, the Palestinians did not consent to Israel becoming a state.
Oh.
In fact, they were vehemently opposed.
Boo! I mean, well, you know, the group of people who don't necessarily love the idea of Jews and Judaism, they were upset. This whole idea of, like, he calls out Palestinians and Palestine, like, Palestinian as a political group of people, it was an invention. That identity is a political invention. They used to be called Arabs. Go back and look, there's not a whole lot of usage of the term Palestinians up until the last few decades, okay? So please spare me this. These are people who have no clue what it is they're talking about. They don't understand history. They just understand who they hate and who they're supposed to support.
I don't think that now we need to have Israel's consent to have Palestine become a state.
Uh-huh.
I think that Palestine declares itself a state. I think if we would recognize it, I think that would help us to move this process along.
I'm curious, Al. I can call him Al because he knows everyone gets confused when I say Al Green. Then people start singing Let's Get It On and we can't do it. If you recognized the state of Palestine, and let's just pretend it's just Gaza, because I know you probably think it's all of Israel. We'll push that aside. When the state of Palestine, whom I'm supposing you want to have a relationship with, when they commit a terrorist attack against Israel, what's your stance? What do we do? What does America do? Whose side do we take? Because right now you're taking the side of Hamas. Are you going to do that? And if you do, are you okay dropping Israel as an ally for Palestine? The answer is, of course, yes. Is that smart for us? Is that smart for the region? Is that smart for democracy and Western civilization? No. Because, you know, Hamas doesn't just hate Jews. They hate Western civilization. They hate Americans. They don't only hate Jews. Sure, they hate Jews the most. Like, that's the top of the list. But once they take care of the Jews, they don't really want some good things to happen to us, and they don't go about their merry way. Because you know what? They're going to get bored at some point. At some point, they're going to like, okay, well, I guess we'll call it quits as Hamas. We got rid of all the Jews. Okay. Well, you know, I've always wanted to take up painting. No, they're going to turn their attention somewhere else. Now, at the same time, and this I think it might be my favorite story and my favorite bit of audio I've ever heard, and that's saying a lot. There is a group of 18 students at the University of South Florida who are pretending to go on a hunger strike all over this issue. And they say they're going to continue their hunger strike and won't stop at all until the university severs its financial ties with any company that supports Israel. So this is a BDS group, which is an anti-Semitic view. Now, the Tampa Bay Times says the students also demanded that the USF president, Raya Law, state that genocide is occurring in Gaza. Okay, so they're cheating a little bit here because they're not actually on a complete fast. Number one, they're still consuming calories. You'll hear about it in a second. They're drinking water as well. Now, taking out the calorie portion of this, let's say they were on a full, true hunger strike and they were drinking water still, you can survive up to maybe 3 months without food, without calories, maybe 3 months. And that's assuming you're already healthy. You'll be miserable the entire time, but you can probably survive, because science, for about 3 months. Here's one of the students on her TikTok account.
Hello, I'm Khadija. Hey. Today is day 3 of the strike. For 3 days, USF has forced us to starve ourselves.
Well, they didn't force you.
To have our voices heard. We are relying on fish oil and water to sustain ourselves.
It's got calories
and fat. I feel malnourished and fatigued. My body feels weak. How can we believe USF cares for their student body when they make it abundantly clear they'd rather watch us starve than even meet one of our demands?
Oh, man.
Are they waiting for someone to drop dead to take action?
Maybe.
It's been 3 days, Raya Law. When will you care about your students as much as you care about your paycheck?
Oh, why won't you care about... I'm hungry. I feel kind of weak during my intermittent fast.
I also like how this is a self-imposed hunger strike. No,
it wasn't self-imposed. They were forced.
They weren't.
They were forced.
No one at the university is like, you are not allowed to eat until your ridiculous demands that you made up in your head are...
I just love the logic, though, because basically she's saying, you obviously don't care because you're not giving in to what it is we're doing. You want us to die. So if a Jewish student said, okay, I'm going to go on a fast until you call out Hamas as a terrorist organization that's hell-bent on the destruction of Israel. So I'm assuming that you would then take their side and see their, you would understand their position. You know what? Another Jew might do it, and then they'll both all die. And then both sides will be upset, and we can continue status quo of everyone being upset with each other. My God. Other than that, she's very brave. She's very brave.
She's very brave?
Yes.
All right. That's what we call brave these days?
Stand to lose a couple pounds. 1-800-465-8770 for your text. Don't forget, we have a video up right now brought to you by your local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn of Nunn Better Tax Resolution. Check out our social media accounts. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. There is a TikToker who has gone viral. He's actually a Venezuelan migrant. And he's posting videos to social media like all the other insufferable people on TikTok do. But one particular one explained how illegal immigrants can take advantage of squatting laws in order to stay not only in this country illegally, but stay on someone else's property illegally.
Mi gente, he pensado invadir una casa en United States.
He said, I have thought about invading a house in the United States. I found out that there is a law that says that if a house is not inhabited, we can seize it. Make sure you download the KTTH smartphone app so that you can take the station with you wherever it is you go. Now, while I don't need him to endorse the app, I will certainly take it. So he's out there saying, this is what you need to do in order to stay. And by the way, he's 100% correct. he's absolutely correct. I mean, there's going to be some different laws state by state, but like if you go into New York, California, go into Oregon, Washington, you can just go ahead and take control of someone's home and you're good for at least a year. And in fact, not only are you good for a year, we are going to pay for your legal representation once you actually have to get in front of a court. I mean, this is so insane. Now, there's some guy named Hunter Flash Shelton. He's Flash Shelton. He's called a squatter hunter. He goes after the squatters on behalf of people who own property that has been basically held hostage. And he's noticing, he tells Fox News, a whole bunch of illegal immigrants are doing this.
Regardless of how you feel politically or morally about the situation, put that aside and just think about the masses. Just think about all of these people coming into the country. We don't have enough housing. We don't have enough resources to handle the people that we have living on the streets today. We have irresponsibly opened a door for a whole lot of people to come into this country, and we aren't prepared to deal with them. So what are we going to do when the squatter is no longer the criminal, but just somebody trying to survive?
Yeah. Imagine. I mean, given how many people are in this country illegally, imagine if even just a small portion decided to do what the guy in the video is saying. By the way, Brady, can you put in the future, I want menacing violin under me while giving my monologues?
All like, monologues with
yes. It has menace. It has to be menacing violin.
How
or
menace-
cello. Or cello.
How menacing do you want? Like, give me a reference outside of this video. What kind of menace do you want to feel?
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, what they just had was probably a 4, and I'd like a 12.
You want to? Oh,
yes.
All right, I'll get the orchestra together.
I want like Jaws level menacing. That's how bad I want it to be. Now, there's a report out from the Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse TRAC. They track immigration case data and backlogs. And their database, what they look, includes the records from the Department of Homeland Security. And they've got records up through February of 2024. This is a nonpartisan, simply, they're just a data gathering organization. And they have put out a shocking statistic. About 200,000 deportation cases did not file the required notice to appear by the time of the scheduled hearing, which meant about 200,000 deportation cases were tossed. They were tossed. Thanks, Joe Biden. This is, whether it's intentional or part of just the incompetence coming from the image, doesn't really matter because at the end of the day, it's the same end result, which is that people who should have been deported no longer get deported. It shouldn't be this difficult. You're just sending out a notice. I mean, I, from time to time, forget to do things. You know what I do? I have Outlook calendar, and I go on the calendar, and I put in little reminders, and it pops up. So, like, for this morning, it popped up and told me I had a meeting. Later today, it pops up to tell me, hey, go put out that notice for deportation for those cases that you're handling. It's very simple. You can even tell your iPhone via the whatever the command is for Siri. I don't want to say it because then people are going to get their phones all screwed up. But you can say blank Siri. Well, that doesn't sound right. But, you know, code and then Siri. And it says, how can I help you? And you're all like, hey, why don't you go ahead and give me a little bit of a reminder to go serve these notice to appear. So we don't allow a lot of unvetted people to still stay in this country illegally. It's really not difficult. It's surprisingly simple. And what's especially annoying about the story is that's your job. So how exactly did you forget to do your job? Seriously, like, how could that? What else are you doing? Like, this is, it seems to be a big piece of the puzzle here when, like, how do you spend your day? Well, I'm supposed to spend my day throwing out all these notice for hearings, but instead I've been on TikTok all day. I'm addicted. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. Are you using your government phone? Well, yeah, why? Because that's, you're not allowed to do it, and now you're terminated. Oh, yeah, well, I'm going to sue you. What are you going to sue me for? I happen to be non-binary and black and in a wheelchair and blind and missing three fingers. And so what you're doing, oh, and I'm 61 years old. So we're throwing ageism on top of it too. I'm in so many protected classes, I'm keeping this job forever. You fool, you shouldn't have hired me, but I got into this job because you were doing everything on Zoom and you couldn't see me because I told you I didn't know how to turn on my camera. It's the Jason Rand Show.
How not to be the victim of a home invasion robbery. We'll talk with super secret security expert Mike at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning on the Brian Suit Show.